Like I said before, I've always said this. We've been in Tampa for well over 100 years.
Yeah.
Our family has. And it has been a journey and a half. And a journey and a half, man.
This has always been an interest to me, how black people got to Tampa, how black people got to Florida.
Wow.
And the conditions. So this is an instructive story.
Yeah, it is. Hey, folks, hang tight. We're going to go into NPR in just a minute. But first, we're going to listen to the sounds of Tuxedo and Do It.
Do it for you. I like to break it down. This joint has got me open. Ooh, that's my favorite song. I put my thing in motion. I do it all night long.
Sunday Forum, WMNF Tampa.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. President Biden's plans to massively expand the nation's social programs and investments against climate change are moving ahead. This weekend, the House Budget Committee advanced the bill for an expected floor debate this week. But NPR's Elena Moore reports not even the president's own party is entirely on board.
The committee voted 20-17 in favor of sending the bill to the House floor. Congressman Scott Peters, a moderate Democrat, was the only member of his party to vote no, joining all 16 Republicans on the committee. The bill, which includes major investments in climate provisions and social programs, is a large part of Biden's policy agenda. But moderate and progressive Democrats are continuing to fight over the total cost. Conversations also remain tense between Senate Democrats as several key moderate voices continue to hold back on support. And with just a slim party majority in both chambers, every vote counts. Elena Moore, NPR News, Washington.
U.S. officials are reopening the international border crossing in Del Rio, Texas. NPR's Carrie Kahn reports from San Antonio. It was closed for more than a week after thousands of migrants set up camp around the bridge at the Rio Grande.
Trade and travel operations are getting back to normal in Del Rio, Texas, Saturday. Officials say they expect to open the crossing for all cargo traffic by Monday. The international crossing had been closed since September 17th as thousands of migrants, mostly Haitians, began forging the Rio Grande River from Mexico and setting up an improvised encampment under the bridge. On Friday, the last of the migrants had been removed by U.S. officials. Around 2,000 people were deported on flights back to Haiti. Authorities also released thousands into the country or sent them to other U.S. immigration processing facilities to determine whether they could stay in the U.S. Thousands more Haitians remain in Mexico and countries in Central and South America. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, San Antonio.
Iceland has become the first European country where women will hold the majority of parliamentary seats. The BBC's Risto Pukka reports 33 women are joining the governing body and men will hold 30 seats.
Women have long played a major role in Icelandic politics. In 1980, Vigdís Finnbogadóttir became the world's first elected female president, and she held the office for a record 16 years. The position is mainly ceremonial, but women have also been at the forefront of day-to-day politics in Iceland. For most of the time, since 2009, they have held the post of prime minister, and the governments led by Jóhanna Sigurðardóttir and Katrín Jakobsdóttir have been longer lived and more stable than ones where the prime minister has been male.
The BBC's Risto Pukka reporting. You're listening to NPR News. The 74th annual Tony Awards are being handed out tonight in a long-delayed ceremony at Broadway's Winter Garden Theater. Jeff London reports from New York, because of the pandemic, only shows that opened before mid-February 2020 were eligible to be nominated.
The ceremony was originally scheduled for June 2020, but nominations were postponed until last October. Tonight, Broadway stars Audra McDonald and Leslie Odom Jr. will host the two-part event. Most awards will be given between 7 and 9 p.m. in a ceremony streamed on Paramount+. The big awards, Best Musical Play and Play Revival, will be handed out in primetime as part of a live concert event on CBS titled Broadway's Back. The three shows nominated for Best Musical are Tina, Jagged Little Pill, and Moulin Rouge. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
A 24-hour global concert is underway to raise awareness about issues that affect the whole planet: climate change, hunger, and vaccine equity. Elton John kicked off the Global Citizen Festival in Paris. Lizzo, J-Lo, and Ed Sheeran are among dozens of performers in New York, London, Seoul, and elsewhere. Tens of thousands of people are attending the concerts in person, while many more are tuning into the broadcast. Organizers say the goal is not to raise money, rather to rally citizens and encourage world leaders to take action. I'm Amy Held in Washington, and you're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include John Herman, who notes that UNICEF is helping to deliver 2 billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines in 2021 equitably. More at unicefusa.org/endthepandemic.
Night here on WMNF with your host Scott Hopkins. Tune in from 6 to 8 p.m. to listen to one of America's greatest art forms, from Basin Street in Kansas City to the Tampa Bay area, Florida, and the world. Past, present, and future. You'll hear it all on The Colors of Jazz, Sundays.
To get a new car, the rainy season is coming. So if you're in need of a more reliable ride to get you through the wet roads safely, donate your old one to WMNF. We accept used cars, trucks, and even RV donations, running or not. Donating is easy. Learn more at WMNFcar.org.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, 9 a.m. weekday mornings right here at 88.5 FM. You'll hear the same fearless investigative reporting on topics too hot for the mainstream media. Tune in to Democracy Now! 9 a.m. weekdays right after the morning show. That's right here on WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland, Clearwater, Winter Haven, and Venice.
Betty Davis, if I'm in luck, I might just get picked up. The wife of Miles Davis, the godmother of funk, right here on the Sunday Forum. WMNF 88.5 Tampa, Sarasota, St. Pete. Our guest this morning is attorney Geraldine Williams, my mom.
Yes.
Hey, mom.
Hello.
And we are back. We are so excited to have you here. And to be talking about what we're talking about is extraordinary, because there's so much There's so much information that you have researched and brought out. I mean, absolutely tremendous. This discussion of survival, the theme of survival is one that resonates to not just black women, as we said before, but it's a theme now that has actually resonated and does resonate with women from all different cultures and walks of life. But this is generational. And what makes this unique is that it's, for me, is that this is my, you know, this is my family, right? And we're seeing photographs, Mabili, of people that I've always wondered what they look like. Right? Yeah. That trips me out. Absolutely. Mom, did it trip you out when you saw that? Like, when you saw the picture of your aunt like that?
Yes, it did, probably for a different reason. However, I had been telling my children that we were 100% African. I knew better, but I just kind of but I had no idea. And so, yes, it did trip me out. And I want to say this, that there is an underlying message in all that we discuss about survival and the talk. We're still having those talks, and I'll talk about that too. But let me just let you know how important this is. When we say survive, that's an important word, survive, for us. Because over 2 million Africans died during that transfer. Over 2 million. Mm-hmm. Now, just think about it. So we are the offspring of people who survived just the 2 million. Now, when they did the trek from interior Africa to the coast, they lost about 600,000. Work with me now. Follow me. We are survivors. And then the Middle Passage from the coast to the coast, from the African coast to the American East Coast, we lost another 300,000. That's those that they can kind of sort of count.
Wow.
I'm saying that there were more than that. And then when you think about what those who survived all of that, what they went through, and I'm following this one person, and she is my hero. I'm saying she went through all of that, and we have come down through the ages, and we are here now. Mm. We are survivors of the fittest. And we need not hold our heads down. It was what it was, but they found a way to live through it so that we could be here today. And for me, that's very important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Folks, call in 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663. Talk to Attorney Geraldine Williams. Let's go to the call. We have a call here.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Caller, you're on the Sunday Forum.
Hello, can you hear us?
Hello.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll keep waiting until... until they come to the line. Meanwhile, we have moms on at the same time. So.
Yeah.
While we're waiting, let me let your listeners know that while we are addressing the talk, how to survive being colored, this week, next week, we'll be talking about Up to the Bottom. That's my autobiography. And then the following week, we'll be talking about Mandela and Me. And it's important for me to let you know about next week, because it's not important just to know about me and what and who I am. It's to know what kind of contribution that somebody who lived in the bottom, because that's the section of Ybor City where I was born and raised, is called the bottom.
That's right.
Okay? And so I said... there were events in my life that carried me up to the bottom. Uh-oh. Now, what is she saying? I'm saying that I was born in the bottom. that I attended segregated schools, churches. My whole way of life was segregated. And I talk about how Mama and how she did this. She talked the talk and she walked the walk. Very unique. I didn't know what she was doing, but she was preserving my life. She was making sure that the first three words that I learned to memorize were colored, white, and only. Mm. My first three words. Mm. And I had to learn them, and she explained them to me. Not only did she explain it, she showed me. Now, that's an interesting story. Now, and I talk about how my parents, not just my mother, but my parents protected, they prepared, and protected me. And I talked, as this was very important to me, about how my father said no to me. Now, my father had never said no, and I thought he was speaking another language. But he said no, I could not protest, I could not demonstrate, I could not march.
But we're going to, hold on, okay. Hold on, because we want to save that for the other shows now. We're going to save other shows. Yeah. We got plenty of stuff to talk about here with the talk. We got plenty of stuff to talk about here. We got a call that's coming in right now. Mm-hmm. Let's get that caller. Uh-oh. It's all right. We'll get it back. We'll get it back.
Go ahead, caller.
Caller?
Caller, go ahead.
Is this me, the wrong man?
Yes, sir.
There we go.
Hey, good morning. Let me turn the radio down real quick. I got to do a quick job, bro. Okay, first of all, I'd like to commend your mother for a couple of things. First, for having good Walter, and then for protecting them like she's supposed to. My mother and father did the same, and most mothers and fathers do, but due to the structure of the system, we ostracize and destroy for that, you know, for a lot of false beliefs that you're not your children's keeper, your keeper is not, you know. I want to say you should send that woman some flowers every time you think. You send them to your old lady. That's my mom, man.
I want to give her like a big old thing of flowers, man. I used to, man, let me tell you, until I started seeing the price, dude, I was like, God, oh. At least
yeah.
Got we, mom's we lost him again. We lost him. We lost him again.
I'm here.
Okay. Hey, Mom?
Yeah, you say you should get flowers.
Yes. Yes. We'll get Ron in just a minute. Ron, call back, Ron. Oh, there he is right there. There he is right there.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right. I come right back on. I got the electricity in me. We all electromagnetic. That's what I love. So it ain't got nothing to do with color. That's just an appearance.
There you go.
Like your mom said, I mean, all of us been mixed to the core. We're on a meltdown. But I had a serious question to ask Mom about the research because I've been dwindling and going back and forth. And me and my father went back and forth about it because I understood from my research that there was already Africans here, which they wouldn't call the indigenous people, was Indians. And they was dark-skinned, very dark. The pictures they show you don't dictate how the people look. And not only that, during slavery and post-slavery, we integrated and went in there with the American Indians. So from that culture, we were deprived of economics like the American Indians were because we was part of that whole movement when they were struggling against the United States for their identity and their property and everything. And we was part of that. And they never have or gave us anything for that. In fact, they deny our heritage that we part Indian. You see what I'm saying? So it has a twofold catch there. And I'm glad that she's putting the biographies down and the book so that we can trace far. It's not that many generations because I know for a fact my family was Indian and they came out of India, but my dad always said we came from Africa. So I'm, kind of crossed between that and not really knowing, but at the same time, everything came out of Africa, so he's right. Leave it like that. If she found any information on that, and maybe we can get together as a people and a culture and demand our reparations and get us a gambling casino, maybe a weed shop. I don't know.
Mom, are you here?
Whatever.
Mom, did you hear that? She over there giggling.
Whatever we supposed to be getting to get ours. I don't. I'm tired of we got to ask, we got to beg, we got to plead to you, and you ain't never want to come straight. like you said, the talk has never been straight. It's always been indirect. It's always been with obscuration or something. I don't know what these people think in their minds. So, yeah, I really appreciate the conversation. I appreciate Mom's more. Mine is gone, but she did a hell of a work on me, so I know what the game is, and I appreciate this.
She's calling me, Mom.
Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Mom, you back with us?
Yes, I'm back.
Thank you for calling back. Do apologize about that.
So, did you hear what Ron was saying, Mom?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So, Ron was, first of all, he was commending you for me. But then the other thing he was commending you for was for your research and the work that you're doing. And if you could speak to the research, because we're actually going to get into that in just a minute. But we have another call.
And
we
spoke
have
about call. Reparations.
He spoke about reparations as an issue. But we have another call. Let's get that call in.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Cheryl Cusso.
Good morning.
Good morning again. Congratulations to the Sunday Forum. I appreciate listening to you guys. And oh my goodness, my hero, Mrs. Geraldine Williams. It's such a pleasure to hear her begin to allow us to be with her as she trailblazes her trilogy. But this is what I wanted to say or ask the question. I was watching a show called The American, and I caught this episode. The show may have come on a couple of years ago, but I caught this episode, and it's the actress Taye Diggs, and he's a Beverly Hills football coach. He's married to a white woman. And they bring this African-American kid into their home, a star player.
All-American.
All-American.
That's it. Yep. I'm a fan.
But there's one episode, and it speaks to what Mrs. Williams is saying today. He goes into the mixed kid goes into the hood with his star player that's living in their home, and the police stops them, slams them down on the ground. Mm-hmm. And so the mixed kid is like, what is going on? But they live in Beverly Hills and had not lived or experienced what was happening in, 20 miles down the road, Crenshaw,
mm-hmm.
out in L.A. And when they have a conversation with Taye Diggs, the father, he says, I thought I had sheltered my kid. And I thought I had time to have the talk.
Right. Right.
And I thought about that, and I'm listening to Mrs. Williams talk about the talk and the number of generations that led to her mom having to talk with her. And so one of my questions, because, oh my gosh, we're thinking we have more time to have the talk, but look at what this world, what has happened in just the last year. Long before George Floyd, were we not having the talk? And the talk that her parents had, I didn't have that talk with my parents. Whole different generation, whole different era. But can you imagine those three words, colored, white, and only? So to you, Mrs. Williams, congratulations. I'm looking forward to the full interview, all sessions, and the books when the trilogy is released. I'll be right there waiting for my signed copy. What made you decide now to publish your manuscript beginning with the talk?
Actually, that is a very good question because I have been working on this since 2012. I started writing...
2012.
And I backed into this part of it because I started writing. My first one was Mandela and Me, which is now the memoir, which is at the end. But I backed into the autobiography because I said nobody knows who Me is. Everybody knew who
yes.
I was, but then no one knew Me. So in writing about Me, I got further and further. And what got me so far back is that... I was talking, what is very important, one very important contribution I've made to life is that I integrated a college at the University of Florida, the College of Journalism and Communications, And in doing that, in writing about that, I had to recall that I didn't go up there alone. My cousin, who happened to have been a maternal cousin, also went. So we both went from Middleton High School, all black Middleton High School. We integrated, helped to integrate the University of Florida. And so in writing about his contribution also, I looked over to Florida State University, and two of my maternal cousins also made significant contributions toward integration there. So I said, wait a minute now. If all of us are maternally connected, where did we begin? And so I started going back and back and back into the generations. And by going back into the generations, I think I have found that person who was the mother of the sisters who made us cousins. Then I found that, we all had to survive. How did we do that? And in writing about the talk, I realized that, you know, I thought we were basically over that part of a need for that. We were basically over it because children go to school together now. They're blacks and whites in the same class. Mothers and fathers of adults work together. Why do we need to talk? Because people know each other. They see each other. They exercise together. Why is there a need for the talk, a continued need for the talk? Well, the real deal is that there is always an attempt to limit the progress of African Americans or people of color. Always. Mm-hmm. Every generation. Now, it's different, and the talk has to be different because they didn't have automobiles back in the day. So we didn't have to worry about police stopping and pulling them out and killing them. But, and so they had a different talk then, a different talk the next generation. They have a different talk now. And I am saying as long as we have people of color, we'll probably have to have the talk. Now, what will likely help is the browning of America, where you don't have the blacks and the whites, because people start to think, we're talking about blood, because people are blending, and so the talk will be different, but there still will be a talk.
There still will be a talk. I am so looking forward to it. Can you imagine, Walter, hosting book clubs now as a book clubber myself, the talk with Geraldine Williams? And it's a talk that we have to educate our children so that they can educate the next generation. And where she's coming from, we sent three children to the University of Florida, and we did not have that type of talk. But you know what? One year, the youngest son was stopped by a racist cop, and by the grace of God, didn't hurt him. But we never had that talk with him. Didn't think we had to. Mm-hmm. But thank you for bringing that to the forefront. It's a conversation that we have to have, and it's not too late to go back and have that conversation so that we can all continue to have the talk. Thank you so much.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Russo. And she's so right. She's so right. I mean, you know, again, this transcends anything with regard to gender and the issue of what we're, the conversations that we have to have as fathers with our sons.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what we're accustomed to talking about, right?
Right.
But now what we're seeing is a generational conversation from the horrific experience of being traded like cattle, being raped, bearing children as a result of continuous rape. And then trying to save those children from being sold or even killed.
Walter, one of the observations that I made during the research is
that when the southern plantation owners realized that they were no longer going to be getting slaves brought over the Trenton to the Atlantic, then they started creating, producing their own slaves.
Mm-hmm. Slave breeding
and
farms.
And those girls, I believe they started as early as 13 to 15. They had to bear children, and they were expected to have, I think it was 20 or 22 by the time they were age 20. So that they were just baby machines.
Mm-hmm. If you listen to the slave narratives from the 1930s, that from people who were, was the Writers Bureau that was going around doing the slave. Yeah, I think we ought to do a show about that one.
Definitely.
We ought to do that. Where they would go around and actually speak to the remaining, the people who had survived slavery. And they traveled the whole United States doing it. But the responses from the women, I always listen very carefully to the responses of the women. And they would say, I had 12 kids. I had 8 kids. You know, one woman I remember had, I forget how, she had a lot of kids, but they just took them and sold them off as they were coming out.
Like, well, in our family, we've been doing some research. Drew Smith from out of the University of South Florida has been working with me more recently. And in 1900 census, he found that this woman, whom we are identifying very closely, had, and she is the one who had the daughters who made us cousins, make us cousins. She had 15 children.
Jeez.
So that was an expectation.
Mm-hmm.
So let's. I'm interested to go back, and I'm sure everybody else is. Please call in 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. Our guest this morning is my mom, Attorney Geraldine Williams, and we're talking about, and this is the first in a three-part series, we're talking about The Talk. The Talk is a portion of an epic story of survival on the matrilinear side of Miss Williams' family, of my family. And we are very glad to have her here this morning to discuss this very relevant and timely, very timely, epic story and literature, piece of literature that I think is going to be tremendous. And it sounds biased coming from me, but you heard callers call in right now that have said that they want to learn more, they want to hear more about this and the research that's happened. So when we talk about it, I remember you saying, Mom, that you found that you believe that these, or that you've gone back as far as the child who got to the plantation in Virginia?
Yes, my understanding from my cousin who died was that she was taken into Virginia and auctioned there. That's where. And there is a Weiche, W-Y-C-H-E, Virginia. Yeah, and so my understanding is she was taken there. Now, let me back up just a little bit from there and take her back to the Cape Coast of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I have inserted the date, 1806. And I said that because, as I said, they stopped the slave trade at the end of 1807. So I said, all right, let's try. I mean, I didn't know. I said, let's try 1806. And also, I backed up from a date of birth of the last person that I could find, and that was 1839. So I'm figuring that they had the girls have babies at about age 15. So I may be wrong in my timing, I may be wrong in my calculations, but it seems to me that she would have been about 12 years old at about 1806. Then she would have been taken to Virginia at 1807. Then she would have born a baby at about age 15. Okay? And then it brings us down to the generations with this person who was born in 1839. So that's where we are now in 1839. and we're still authenticating everything prior to that time.
And so we have someone who was born in 1857.
Mm-hmm.
Who was that?
Okay. Now, that was another Anna, I believe.
Would she have been the child of this African?
She would not have been a child. It was a couple of generations from that.
Mm-hmm.
I think 57 would have been late for her to have been a child of this African. I don't think so.
Okay.
I think she may have been a grandchild.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So this is interesting because we find that, I remember we found that she was born, we calculated, right? And we found that she was born in 18, that she was born in 1857.
Mm-hmm.
She has a sister who was born in 1877. Is that correct?
Well, that particular person had siblings who were born like a year and a half to 2 years apart.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there were at least 11.
And this was our, which grandmother was this?
Well, I think the one you're referring to would have been my great-great-grandmother.
Okay.
She would have been the grandmother of my grandmother.
Wow.
And she was, and I got that from the 1910 census. She brought her grandchildren from Madison County to Tampa, and they were living with her at number 8 Newcomb. And she identified herself as their grandmother.
And Newcomb Street is a street that we believe no longer exists. Here in Tampa.
I didn't find it in the Tampa registry.
I haven't found it yet. I haven't found it yet either, Ma. But I know that there is a search for it. But I tell you this, that makes it, and she died here in Tampa in 1912. Is that correct?
Now, we're checking that out, too. We have to check everything. That is one public record that has said that. I've seen others that say 1913.
Okay.
So, but it's, yes, we have public record that says that she died in 1912.
Now, where was she buried?
That public record said that she was buried at Zion, Z-I-O-N, Cemetery in Tampa. And that's one cemetery that I didn't have any record of. And another was buried at a cemetery that the ladies up in at the Genealogical Society in Madison said that they had never heard of. So when I got to cemeteries that I hadn't heard of, then I would be sure to let Fred Hearns know, and he's head of the History Museum, and I would let the president of the NAACP know.
Yvette Lewis.
Yeah, Yvette. Mm-hmm. I would let her know that, here's another cemetery that we don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking into that also now, because we must authenticate as closely as we can any references to something like that, where there was a burial and there was a cemetery at that time that no longer exists.
Wow. Wow. Okay. This is really something. This is really something. Because, again, these are people that we have record of. These are real people that we've only, you know, this is like that Henry Louis Gates.
Yeah.
Right? This is like Henry Louis Gates.
Mm-hmm.
And for this to be written the way that it's been written, it's tremendous. Because we follow a young girl from the coast of Africa to Virginia. Virginia to Madison County. She bears children in Virginia. Those children or a child is carried down to Madison County to a plantation in Madison County, Florida. And what's the name of the area, Ma, in Madison County? Is it Cherry Lake?
Cherry Lake.
Mm-hmm. Which is a well-known plantation area.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where they are. This is where they grew up. And they bear children there.
But it was,
until
what,
after emancipation.
Walter, what was so phenomenal to me, and this is, I mean, she was my hero all along. But the fact that this girl was able to use all of that that she learned from those white men as they raped, they sodomized, whatever they did, she recorded that mentally. And she observed. Now, this is how I have written it. Now, somebody else would take it and write it differently. But she, because I needed to find something positive, which is hard to find,
right,
other than, of course, I'm here. But they didn't just ship her child away. My point is, she used all that she had learned to persuade that child's father to get her out of harm's way. Because my research shows me that two things could happen to those what they called mulatto children. Number one is the wives of the plantation owner would recognize that they're not African, that they, you know, they have mixed blood, and they would have some reason to believe that he would have fathered those children. They would try to kill them. And I am of the opinion that the servants in the household told this girl that she had to protect her child and get that child out of harm's way of that wife, okay? Another thing they would do with children who were the mulattoes or mixed race is that they would have them whipped, beaten, totally abused, and sold. So either way, she didn't want her child exposed to that kind of danger. And she used what she had been taught by them against him to get her out. And I'm very appreciative.
Yeah, definitely. Mabiz?
Well, I'm very curious about what all we're going to learn, what all we're going to find out. Because I think all of our families have a story, and I'm curious as to what role you have found or will find that your family played during the Civil War. We know that we all had to make choices during that period, and I know that where my family was living during the Civil War was a place where a lot of black people were coming out to fight. So I'm just curious as to what do you already know or will find, do you think, will you find out about that particular era, that struggle coming out of slavery and through the Civil War?
Well, the Civil War, I was dealing with generalities, not specifics. And so I didn't look for, and it didn't reveal itself. I have not seen any references to that. But of course, now I'm following a female. Or wasn't following a male. And so I have not discovered that, let me say.
Right.
While I was researching and finally went on Ancestry.com, I'm researching my maternal family, my paternal family, which I did not expect to find anything on, not anything. I have gone back quite a few generations there, too, so that's where I will probably find information relative to the Civil War.
Yeah, probably.
But I'm turning that, full disclosure, I'm turning that information over to a younger cousin, paternal cousin, who has that interest, because I can't do it all. That's a lot.
Yeah, that
but
is
I a lot. Had already gotten the family tree started in 2001. I came back to the country in 2000. 2001, I hosted a family reunion. I put together a family tree, and then I went back to all of the funerals of my father's siblings. And then those people gave me more information. So I have that, plus what's on Ancestry.com. We're well on our way with that.
But I am also interested, my sister's interested in what happened on the maternal side of the family, because we believe there's a quality to that part of the story that we're missing. And So as you've done, we want to follow your lead and research the maternal side of the family, because I think we're missing a lot of information.
Well, I can tell you that there's a lot out there that can be very helpful, but you must have a lot of patience and persistence, because, now for us, as I said, every generation had an Anna or an Annie or a Henrietta. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, wait a minute, I thought, no. Then you have to be very specific with those death certificates. And then you have to go into the census every 10 years. I even found one who had voted.
Oh,
now,
right.
There were others who may have voted, but I have the voting record. I was so proud of that. 1867, I was so proud of that. I have the voting record of that person who did vote.
1867?
Fleisch family.
67, Mom?
1867.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would be interested in knowing if that happened in our family, but I haven't found any information just yet if we've had any engagement in voting. But I do believe we had some engagement in military.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're going to find out more information there. But I'm very curious about what you're finding out about your family, and especially on the maternal side.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's important for me to emphasize that I think that we need to be positive, because whatever they needed to have done to survive and to keep us on the survival mode, they did.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And we are here because of that. And instead of referring to black women as hoes and bitches and those kinds of things, not whores, whores, but hoes, H-E-S, I'm like, okay. And I'm offended by that, of course. I am saying we have so much to be proud of.
That's right.
And I don't like the angry black woman. And I don't like all those references, I don't like. But I'm a black woman, and I'm saying here are reasons that we can elevate to the point of congratulations and joy and say that we have a reason to be pleased, happy that these people did. I mean, not happy that they went through what they went through, but they survived what they went through so that we could still be here today.
That's right.
Absolutely. So, listen, we're going to take a moment, kind of lighten this up a little bit, and we're going to listen to the sounds of Esperanza Spalding and I Know You Know. WMNF 88.5 Tampa, Sarasota, St. Pete, in the Sunday Forum.
Try to pretend you didn't call me just 'cause I was on your mind.
sounds of Esperanza Spalding. And I know, you know, I like that beat, man.
Yeah.
She's brilliant. Brilliant. Oh, man. She plays every string instrument that you can possibly think of. And a bass. She's known for playing that bass guitar. Man, she's awesome. So, hey, folks, listen, it's 9:51 in the a.m. We're coming up to wrap-up time. If you want to call, please do 813-239-9663. We have our special guest here with us, and this is Attorney Geraldine Williams, my mom. And we're talking about the talk. The talk is coming in different dimensions, as we found today on the show. And it has been with different generations. And we are finding that it spans racial groups, that it spans gender, and the necessity for not just mothers to speak to daughters or aunts to daughters and how they survived the slave trade and being here on plantations and all the dangerous things that happen to women, but what type of dangerous things happen to boys?
Right. You know, Derek Chauvin, who killed George Floyd, is now back on trial for almost killing a 14-year-old boy.
Come on, man. The same way. Previously.
So
that's crazy.
The talk is important.
It is. Got another call. Caller,
can you hear us?
Hello.
Yes. Hello. Hey, caller. Welcome to the Sunday Forum.
Hello, Walter.
Hey, how you doing?
This is your sister, Lynn Taylor.
Hey, Lynn, what's going on?
How you doing?
I'm all right.
Hey, I've been sitting here listening and checking everything out, and thank you for putting Esperanza Spalding into the mix.
You like that, huh?
Yes, I do. I played bass when I was younger, but I gave it up. But I don't want to waste the time talking about that. Can Jerry hear me?
I think so. Can she?
She can hear.
She can hear you. Yeah, she can hear you.
Okay. Hi, Jerry.
Can you hear?
Mom?
Yes, I did. Yes, I can hear her.
Okay.
Hi, I just wanted to call in to say congratulations, and I am awake and I am listening. And I remember when she started writing this book. I remember all the years. I've listened. I've been interested from the beginning. And I just want to say real quick, because I know you guys are leaving, I'm impressed with the research and all the work and time and blood, sweat, and tears that she's put into this through working and, you know, not feeling well all the time. And I can't wait to purchase all three books. I've been getting the word out because, like I said, I remember when she first started, you know, and I listened to excerpts from the book, and I remember her rewriting and just a lot, you know. I just wanted to say congratulations, and I can't wait.
Thank you, Lynn.
Lynn is one of our one of our local business owners, business owners, and she owns a nail shop, nail salon. Mom, what's the name of the nail salon?
Perfect 10.
Yeah,
and her sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Perfect 10.
My sister owns a nail salon. I've been working there with her as an independent contractor.
Oh.
About 30 years.
Oh, you still with us? I didn't know you still are.
Yes, still there.
Hey, Lynn. We were just talking about you, Lynn.
I don't know how to do this. Do I sign off? Do I stay on? I don't know how this works.
Oh, you ready to go? You can go.
You can go. We got you, Lynn.
Thank you for calling,
Lynn.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. You guys have a good morning. I'm still listening.
All right.
Bye-bye, Jerry. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Lynn. Thank you. Walter?
Yes.
It's very important for me to say that I have a responsibility because this is my lap to run in the relay. And I have taken that responsibility very, very seriously. And in the next book, I talk about, it's up to the bottom. I'm talking about going up to the bottom rung of the white man's ladder to success. up to the bottom. Now, I came from the bottom, but I went up to the bottom rung of their ladder to success. And in doing so, I learned a lot, and then I expanded from that by sharing with people on my original African mother's continent. I went back to Africa to help. And that's what I'm talking about in Mandela and Me. So it didn't just end because I'm here. It continues, and her seed, as her seed, continues to move. It moves in a way that it becomes immortal, that it is immortal. She is still living. Her spirit is within me, within you, within your children. And so what we do is a reflection of what she did for us and what she would have done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are so glad to have had you on and to be doing this series on this what I know is going to be, this is great literature. This is quality literature. And it's going to be a classic. It's going to be a classic. I know it is.
And Ancestry offers DNA tests. Does it tell you enough information?
It doesn't tell you. It can tell. I've seen where it doesn't tell you exactly what tribe or anything like that necessarily if you're looking for tribal information. But I know that when I did it tells you geographically and gives you a little history that you can connect to what you may have heard.
Yeah.
And connects you with people even who will write you messages and say, hey, I have a cousin that's blah, 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 that's from this part of the town, of the country. We may be related.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Well, that's my next step, DNA test.
Yeah, DNA test. Everybody wants to do that now. Wants to do that now. Walter, yes, ma'am.
Walter, your sister, Celicia, was telling me about African, I think it's African.com, African Ancestry.com?
Yeah, African Ancestry, yes.
Okay, and I think that gets you closer to the specific region.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of the continent.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. I think it does. And we're gonna do that. And to be clear, by the way, to everybody out there, this is in no way an advertisement for any of the DNA tests or anything like that.
No.
It just happens to be that this is something that
this is about the science.
This is real. This is the real work that was put in to doing this. And I can tell you for a fact that Mom pulled together a lot of death certificates, birth certificates, census reports, things like that, in order to pull this information together and be able to come and tell you this story. This is not an easy thing to do. It isn't. And so I have, as a historian, I have so much respect for my mother for what she's done. And she's brought to life in real life, in real time, people that I can only imagine what they look like, what they were like, and things like that. And when I was on the campaign trail, I spoke with great pride about being from Ybor City in West Tampa. My mom's from Ybor City, my dad from West Tampa, and being from the bottom. Yeah. And man, listen, it means a lot to be able to say that my family has been here for well over 100 some years in this town, you know, where we're from here. So, hey, listen, folks, we want to thank you for joining us here on the Sunday Forum. Our guest was Attorney Geraldine Williams, my mom, and we're going to see you next week as we talk some more about this epic story about our family and genealogy and more about history.
And we got some more questions for next week.
Plenty more. Here on the Sunday Forum. And as always, folks, from my voice to the radio waves, to the hearts and the minds of the people, we love you. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about it here on the Sunday Forum. This is the sound of Takuya Kuroda in Everybody Loves the Sunshine.
Thank you, Mom.
Okay, enjoyed it. Thank you.
WMNF 88.5 Tampa.